Which superstars are chasing the big bucks? Who's going nowhere? Who's exploring their options? From the offices of Fox Footy, this is the Market Watch Podcast.
And breathe, everyone. The 2017 AFL trade period has finally concluded, and as predicted, it was a frantic finish with arguably the biggest twist saved until the very last trade. And I'm looking forward to getting these two gentlemen's thoughts on the Lachie Weller trade. But as we do this time each year, we're going to go through club by club, a trade grade report card coming up from Adelaide at A right down to the Western Bulldogs at W. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth here for a special trade report card podcast. And as I said before, two fine gentlemen in the podcast bunker to have a look at how it all played out in 2017. Firstly, a man who single-handedly helped Hawthorn to the 2008 Premiership and beyond, of course, as well. Roles with St Kilda and Port Adelaide as well, and now doing great stuff with Star as well and Pro Scout as well, is Chris Pelkin. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Benny. How are you going?
Mate, fantastic. Great to have you back on board. Frantic as always in that final hour.
It really was. I mean, as expected, most people thought things would go late, and it certainly eventuated that way. Unlike, I suppose, two or three years ago where things tend to be a little bit more steady over the course of the week.
Yep.
Yeah, this year they certainly did keep late.
They did keep late, and one man who was all over it and trying to keep his head around all the deals that happened in the last hour is Jacob Wilson from Champion Data. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, Benny. Thanks for having me on. It's very, very frantic in that last hour and a half. I'm still catching my breath after that that frantic end.
Well, we'll talk about the deals that were happened very late in a minute with Lachie Weller and Josh Shackey. But let's start with the Crows working our way alphabetically down. And the trade eventually did happen. 12 months in the making was Bryce Gibbs eventually going to the Adelaide Crows from the Carlton Blues. That deal saw Bryce Gibbs in a fourth-round selection, future second pick, future third pick, going to the Crows as well, along with Gibbs, with pick 10, 16, 73, and a future second coming back to the Blues as well. Overall, Chris, Bryce Gibbs, does he help Adelaide's, I suppose, task and journey to try and go back to that grand final once again in 2018?
Yeah, there's no doubt he does. I would have liked them to push as hard as they did this year last year. I mean, it's all easy in retrospect. I mean, yep, we weren't to know they were going to make a grand final this year. I'm sure they would have liked to have Bryce on grand final day against Richmond because, you know, the outlet kick they really struggled with, getting it outside their defensive 50, and he's ideal to be able to drop back and do that because he's such a precision user of the footy. So, and obviously, you know, with Rory Sloan and the Crouch boys, would have been a great asset in the midfield. So, look, I'm really pleased that Adelaide have been able to secure him. What I do like about it makes them different. It means that they can set up quite significantly different next year. And that's important because there's no point sitting on your hands. They can't expect they're going to make a grand final, even though they're certainly in the best two or three teams.
They did a couple other things. They eventually lost Charlie Cameron. There was some talk that they actually asked for Brisbane's future first-round pick. Instead, they were happy to take Brisbane's offer of pick 12. A little cheeky from the Crows or just playing hardball because he's a contracted player?
Well, I think there was some reservation about letting Charlie go this year. They ultimately would have released him because they know they could have been in the same position without any compensation in 12 months' time. So that's what would have played their hand. Having said that, yes, they were cheeky, and rightfully so. He's a contracted player. Without securing Motlop, that really put them under pressure to keep Charlie. Ideally, they would have liked to keep him. But pick 12 is a big price to pay for Brisbane. So I suppose what I would say in summary about the Crows is that I thought their dealing on Lever was very, very good because they were backed into a corner. Basically, he nominated the club he wanted to go to, and it makes it very hard for a club losing a player, certainly off that ability, to be backed into a corner like they were. So to secure what I thought was really good compensation for Jake and the same for Charlie, I think they probably paid over the odds for Bryce, for a 29-year-old. It balances out at the end of the day. I'm pleased they got Bryce, as I said. Not so pleased they had to lose Charlie and Jake, but at least they look different for next year.
Yeah, well, I think you hit on the head early, Ben, there, where you're saying they're looking for those future picks. Because what you saw with the Lever deal, they got a future first round pick in. And with the Gibbs deal, they also improved their draft position in the future draft. And Chris, you could probably attest to it. Next year's draft is a very Adelaide-centric draft. We were doing our top 25 prospects for next year's draft. And I think we have six Adelaide players going in that top 25. whereas this year we only have two or three. So when they were looking for that pick from Brisbane, they could have got pick 12 this year. But I think for them, getting a pick next year was really the goal to try and get into that elite group of 2018 draftees.
Yeah, you've hit on a really important point that you'll have seen over the course of, especially the last two or three days, clubs really trying to jockey for spots in next year's draft, because it is a much deeper draft, especially at elite talent. I won't get into the stats and the figures that you hold a champion, but ultimately it is looking a much better draft next year. Now, you have to work with what you have, and 2017 draft comes along first. I'm sure there'll be some good players come out of it. We expect that, any draft. But no doubt by having a strong presence in next year's draft really positions the Crows extremely well.
Can't wait to see Isaac Rankin and Jack Lukosius and Connor Rosie and those kind of guys go about their business next year. Now, every club is going to get a grade from you, Chris. What have you landed on with the Crows?
Well, it's funny. Over the course of the week, it was going up and down and up and down. You know, they moved into A category for a little while. They probably dropped off down to a C with the Bryce Gibbs, but I've basically ended with a B. I thought they've certainly ended ahead of the line. The result is a positive one. As I said, Bryce Gibbs will be a very important player next year. Charlie Cameron, he's not a high possession winner. I think his value is probably over.
Over pick 12?
Yeah, I think it was probably they've got overs for that. Basically, Charlie in the first half of the year wasn't an outstanding performer. It was the second half of the year he came good. Now, having said that, he's a talent. I thought that to do it now was the right thing. Likewise, if they weren't going to secure Bryce this year, it would have been too late. So overall, a B. I think they've done quite well.
Just quickly, Jacob, Chris touched on the Jake Lever deal. They did get some good picks back from that deal. There was some talk about potentially Aaron Francis landing at Adelaide, but that deal fell through late in the end. So no, they didn't bring in Francis to replace Lever, but they might have a couple of players ready waiting in the wings.
Well, yeah, there are just a lot of question marks over that back six now, because you lost Lever and he was the leading intercept player in the whole league. So he wasn't just an ordinary defender. He was an A-plus defender. So then what you saw as well last year was we saw Alex Keith was the man who filled in for Lever, but Keith had the worst one-on-one contest loss rate of any key defender. So replacing Lever is going to be really tough for them. They're losing Smith as well because he's coming off that knee as well. So that back line, from going from a real strength, is now probably the question mark over the team. And their midfield, which is what we were questioning last year, is now probably their biggest strength.
On to the Brisbane Lions. They lost Tom Rockliffe, I think, as most people expected, to Port Adelaide. They also lost Josh Shackey late in the piece, giving up a couple of picks there. But they pick up Charlie Cameron, as we just mentioned, Chris, and they also got Luke Hodge. Worked their way up the draft order, a late pick swap as well with Richmond, which gives Richmond some extra draft points, which we'll talk about come the Tigers as well. But how did you see Brisbane's trade period?
It was obviously a busy period for them. I mean, it started even before trade week with the announcement of Luke Hodge, and yep. I'm sure they're pleased about that. That's as much for an off-field presence as it is on-field. There's clearly he'll play a significant amount of footy in 2018, but beyond that, I think it's just a bonus. I think 2019, they expect him to have a bigger impact with what he's doing off the field. So I can see why they made that decision with Luke, but at the same time, I think they paid probably a premium for Charlie Cameron. There'd been talk about them losing Tom Rockliffe, 12 months ago. So it's probably no surprise that Tommy's gone. He's obviously been an outstanding player for them, but there's been probably a test with their relationship with the club at different times over the last one to 2 years. So it's probably good for both parties to have a separation of ways there. Josh Shackey was an interesting one for me. He's a lad who, for some reason, we can speculate what the reasons are, that people are suggesting that he's got a limited time in AFL footy, and because of whether it be uncompetitiveness or whatever people are speculating, I think they've been harsh. I really do.
Lions have been harsh?
I think the industry's been harsh on this kid. I really do. It's only 2 years since he was drafted. You don't lose your ability that quickly. Now, mind you, yes, no player stays as they are when they're drafted, and that's an obvious comment. But so the draft order, as we always say, only is in that order on draft night. After that, they change because blokes go forward and other guys either injured or lose their form. With Josh, I'm really pleased he's got the opportunity to get back to Victoria, because I think that gives him his best chance. But I thought he was, the negative talk around Josh Shackey was a little bit unfounded, in my opinion. Yeah, he hasn't taken the world by storm, but very few 20-year-olds do, as Jacob would be able to attest to. So, I think he's well worth the punt. So overall, with Brisbane, I think they paid a premium for what they did. Ultimately, I do like the fact they've got pick 1, 15 and 18, it gives them a really strong draft presence. They have to continue to go down that path. With 18, they should be able to get a kid like Ballenden through the draft, through their academy system. It's a right number to pay for him in terms of bidding points. I expect they'll secure him regardless of who bids for him. I do expect him to stay in Queensland. Overall, a B- for Brisbane. I think it's a good result without being outstanding.
The Lions, for the last couple of years, Jacob, have had the most inexperienced list in the competition. How are they looking into 2018 now from that perspective?
It was interesting when you look at their pickups. Most people would say Cameron was the more important pickup. But for me, it was actually Hodge, who's essentially a retired player, that's more important because they lost Rockliffe. And for a big chunk of last year, they were playing with less than 60 games experience. It was just Beams, Zorko and Rockliffe and Martin as their experienced heads. And then it was just the kids. So if they lost Rockliffe, they really need to replace him with someone old and someone experienced. And there's no one better than that than Hodge. So I love bringing in Charlie Cameron, but the more important one was Luke Hodge.
He's certainly going to have a big impact up there at the Gabba next year. On to the Blues, and Sos the Saviour, I think, is once again being bandied around, Chris, because he's worked his magic once again. They managed to get a deal done with Bryce Gibbs early on the final day, but then were involved in another four trades where they picked up Matthew Lobe from Port Adelaide, Matt Kennedy from the GWS Giants, and Darcy Lang also makes his way over from Geelong as well. So how do you assess what Sos has done with the Blues?
Extremely well. that's as simple as it can be put. Like, I was very encouraging in the fact that they would look at Bryce Gibbs, even though it was late. The deal was done. I'm really pleased for Carlton, I'm pleased for Bryce and for Adelaide. I think it's a win for everybody. But having said that, if you're going to say who I think finished ahead, I think Carlton did in the Bryce Gibbs situation. To bring in Matt Kennedy, I think, is important for them. He's a player who goes straight into that midfield. He's still finding his way at AFL level, as Jake will attest to. But
number one draft pick, got lots of talent.
Yeah, look, yeah. There's no doubt that he's a talent. Having said that, I do expect that Carlton are still going to be in the bottom sort of six next
sure.
year. I think they're what I do take delight in seeing, though, is that they've taken a risk. We'll touch on North Melbourne a little bit later. I'm disappointed with North Melbourne not taking the same approach, and that's trading out players that you ultimately know who are still in your best half a dozen players in the case of Bryce Gibbs, but looking to the long term. And I think it's a credit to Brendan Bolton and the Carlton Footy Club that they all appear to be on the same page, and I hope they maintain this, because if they struggle next year, the criticism will come that they're not improving. Well, I can assure you they're improving because their list is getting stronger. They've positioned themselves really well, three picks inside 30 for this year's draft, similarly next year, and yet they've been able to pick up players like Lobb, like Lang, like Kennedy, who at least will give them immediate depth to cover maybe some of the shortfall.
Grade?
The grade, probably an obvious one here, an A.
An
I think they've done extremely well.
Well done, Sos. What about the whole Bryce Gibbs situation? Didn't get done last year, Jacob, but able to strike a deal and able to get some pretty good picks back in return.
Well, it's a very different situation to Brisbane for me, because they do have these experienced heads to carry the team forward. So they've still got Murphy, they've still got Cruiser, they've still got Simpson in the team. So they do have that experience around this group where they could afford to lose a player like Gibbs. And then bringing in a player like Kennedy, who is very much what GWS keep passing on to other teams. So it's a player very similar to Jack Steele, who when you see him in the NEAFL is very good. When he gets into AFL, probably lacked a bit of opportunity. He was only averaging 17 disposal. He had good tackle numbers, good clearance numbers. When he gets to Carlton, all of a sudden he'll be in the midfield rotation. He'll get a bit more opportunity and he'll become a very nice player. He's not the sort of player that GWS need. They need elite players. But for Carlton, he's the perfect stopgap until they get to higher up the ladder. So Kennedy will love playing at Carlton. Darcy Lang will love playing at Carlton because there's plenty of opportunity there for those sort of players. And then, as Chris said, getting into the draft in three in the first round, I think it is, that's perfect for them.
We now cross live out to the Holden Centre, and that silence is exactly what sort of happened at the Magpies. They only sort of featured late on the final trade day there, Chris, picking up Sam Murray from the Sydney Swans, a rookie from 2 years ago, Sam Murray. But that was the only trade they did. And to do it, they also got a pick 70 in future third round back, but they gave up a future second round pick back to the Sydney Swans. A trade that certainly raised a fair few people's eyebrows in the Fox Footy office this afternoon.
Yeah, there's talk about this for the last week and even more. Certainly in recruiting circles, it was well known that Collingwood had interest in Sam Murray. I mean, they liked the fact that he's got speed and he can move in different positions, forward and back. Look, he's a speculative pick. I mean, we have to be honest about it. He's not a guy who has exposed form and you're going to say he's going to take the world by storm. He's not going to do that. But what I will say about Collingwood is that while they were a very quiet player this year, over the last two or three years in the trade period, they've been so active.
Oh, yes.
I think it was important they're a little bit quieter this year. I mean, to have the likes of Hoskin, Elliott, Adams, Treloar, Aish all come through over the last 3 years, they really need to move forward from this point in time through the draft. The only thing I would say I would have preferred if they maybe traded a player or two out to improve their draft position.
Yep.
While they were very quiet, they didn't go backwards, but I don't think they took a significant step forward. So,
can you grade them?
Well, the obvious one is to give them an average mark of a C, because there's really no progress made. I mean, if Sam Murray comes good for them, then it's a huge bonus. I mean, that mark in 12 months' time could look very different. What I will say about 12 months' time is that's based around Tom Lynch. I think they're going to be a very, very keen pursuer of Tom Lynch in 12 months. So it might only be a 12-month hiatus for Collingwood fans.
So do you think they'll be right in amongst Tom Lynch should he decide to leave the Gold Coast Suns?
I would say even more so than right amongst it. I would say they're actually right behind pushing right now.
Right, okay. What about your take on who is Sam Murray, Jacob?
Yeah, I think I feel like I'm over a lot of players, but even I had to go to the database to look up what Sam Murray done this year. He played almost every game for the Sydney Reserves. Always take NEAFL numbers with a grain of salt, but even his NEAFL numbers weren't that impressive, averaging 22 disposals, 15 uncontested. So he's that outside running player off halfback. Nothing that said to us that he's worth a second round pick, but they did get a little bit back in return. But look, if Collingwood see something, and he might be a player, but we can't see it really.
On to the Bombers, and if it's sauce for saviour, Adrian Dodoro is right up there. Was asked afterwards at AFL Trade HQ whether this was one of his best performances during the trade period, and he did say that Essendon now is in a much better position circumstance-wise, Chris, with so many bad things in the past now behind them, but they locked up the three S's, Smith, Saad and Stringer. They were the only three deals that Essendon did, and they were able to get those three targets.
Yeah, and I suppose in a quick summary, I think the lowest profile of those three is probably the most important to them in terms of their game style, and that's Adam Saad. I think he gives them a real rebound off the back half, something they really need. I mean, they talked about McKenna and the ability he has, but Saad, I think, is a more complete player. Mm. And, we know McKenna's still finding his way at AFL level, but, while Stringer was the high-profile recruit, they did the right thing. They held their nerve, I thought, by pulling the trigger on Devin Smith so early in the trade period. Yeah. It was a very, very wise thing to do.
Yep.
It basically forced the Bulldogs' hand. It meant that other clubs who had shown interest in Devin Smith, which I think would have just grown over the course of a week, because as clubs fall out of other deals, it actually tends to elevate their second, third or fourth options. And I think Devin Smith would have been one of those guys that value would have gone up over the course of the week. So they did the right thing, pulling the trigger early. Overall, a really, really good result for Essendon. As you touched on, there's been a bit of a dark cloud over the club for such a long time. I think now they can see the blue sky. Even opposition players have seen that blue sky, and I think they've consolidated really where they're going. I think that's really important. So not surprisingly, they get an A, like Carlton.
What about Adam Saad and whether Stringer and I suppose Devin Smith as well, how will that help the flow of ball movement for the Bombers?
I can't hurt it. They've got three players in with a lot of speed, a lot of flair. So they're all offensive players, which is great for, as Chris said, their offensive brand of football. And it's real hats off to Dodoro. This is his second or third really strong trade period in a row. But Adam Saad is the man for me. We actually rate him as an elite general defender. So in that top 10% of the players, because he moves the ball so well. He runs it by hand and by foot. He hits targets. And then on the defensive end as well, we actually have him as a positive defender rating because he closes down his opponents with his speed. And he can actually take on a player like Eddie Betts when he's given the assignments and does a really good job on those players as well. So Adam Saad is a highly underrated player. And to get him for a future second-round pick was a bargain. But I think all three of their deals were actually great bargains.
I think I might have seen Essendon fans tweeting, "Awesome Adrian." He's done a nice job there, Mr. Dodoro. On to the Dockers. We might save the Lockie Weller stuff for Gold Coast, so we'll talk about that then. But they've also been able to pick up Nathan Wilson as well. They did lose a couple of players, maybe on the fringes. Hayden Crozier, that's probably a little bit unfair too, played a bit of football. But Harley Balick struggled to find his way in his two seasons at the Dockers as well. But they've got pick two now, Chris, which is a huge, huge get for the Dockers. Plus Wilson and Brandon Matera also comes from the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, they're obviously blindsided a little bit by the fact that Lockie wanted to leave, and we'll touch on it with Gold Coast. Yep. But to end up with pick 2 and 5 in this draft, where I think the elite talent drops off a little bit early in this draft compared to other drafts. I think certainly compared to next year's draft, Jake would know that it's no comparison. I think next year's bats a lot deeper in terms of the elite level. All drafts will produce players in the second and third round, but next year's is looking quite special at the top end. Having said that, Fremantle with two picks inside five are very much at the top end. And I think what's important is it's a club that has talked about rebuilding for the last couple of years. And obviously with the signing of Ross Lyon for a long period, it gave the indication they were going to rebuild. And he certainly has spoken public about it this year. But at least they started to walk the talk by trading away a player that maybe they initially thought, we don't want to lose Lachie Weller. But they've made the best of what is probably a disappointing situation because he is very much in their plans going forward. To basically pick up Wilson and Mantira. They're basically getting guys there who I think change their game style to a certain extent. They're offensive players, they can run, they use the ball well. Probably things that traditionally Ross hasn't been a great coach of, the more offensive style of player. He's tended to have a very defensive game plan. So it's interesting the type of player they've brought in as much as who they've actually let go. So overall, I'm really pleased with what Fremantle did. It was all at the 11th hour, obviously on the back of that shock announcement with Lachie Weller only 24 hours ago. But I think they made the best of the situation and a B-plus for me.
Good work by the Dockers. And as Chris just touched on, Ross Lyon isn't known for his, flair and drive from the defensive half, it has to say the least there, Jacob. But Nathan Wilson, who is so great to watch from the neutral's perspective, will certainly help that drive.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as Chris said, Ross isn't an offensive coach. And we saw last year they scored 39 points per game from turnovers, which is 8 fewer than every other team. So they just could not move the ball. And bringing in a player like Nathan Wilson, who gained more metres per disposal than anyone else in the league, is a perfect start for that. He is someone who can really use the ball. He's got length on his kick, so he can actually get it out the back of zones. He's the perfect player that they needed. Obviously, that's the same reason, though, they were reluctant to get rid of Lachie Weller because he is one of their better ball users. So obviously, they put a focus on this trade period on getting those people who can actually contribute on the offensive side. Then now they leave themselves with picks 2 and 5 in the draft. I'll probably throw it back to Chris here, but they need to, I think, target a player in this draft who is a outside offensive player. So the person I look at that would be a perfect fit for them might be someone like Jaden Stevenson. So they have pick 2 and 5. 5 seems about right, but if they really want him, they might need to use a pick 2 on him. But is that the sort of player you think they're going to target in the draft, someone who's a bit more outside when they've already got Fife and Neil on the inside?
Yeah, I think it's a good point you make. I'm not sure if Stevenson goes high as 2. I think they'll gamble and leave him to 5. He's a chance to go at 4. I don't see him going inside the first 3.
The Roos have shown a little bit of interest, from what we understand.
Yeah, and I can understand that because he's an exciting player, and I think he's a player who's probably had 12 months too long in the TAC Cup. I think he could have actually made the move last year, and that's just one of the anomalies of the system. We have to wait till they're 18 years of age. And I think he played his best games on the bigger stages this year, if you remember the game at Etihad Stadium.
5 goals.
Outstanding. That's right. So he's a guy who I think certainly, and rightfully so, gets a lot of interest. If you're talking on talent, he's probably in that area of 4 to 6, 4 to 7, in that range. They might have to gamble, as you said, and take him at number 2, but ideally, I think, leave him to pick number 5. Number 2, maybe complementing with a Paddy Dow, someone like that, who's not dissimilar, but has the ability to play more inside than Jaden does.
It's a very exciting prospect for the Dockers to have those two picks inside the top 5. Speaking of exciting prospects, how about the son of the man returning to the Cattery after a good half a decade away up north of the Gold Coast Suns? The Cats got their man back to Gdynia Park. Gary Ablett returns to Geelong. They finally struck a deal with the Suns in the final half hour of the AFL exchange period. But they did lose Stephen Motlop and Darcy Lang as part of their AFL exchange period campaign, the Cats. But Gaz is back. So it's Ablett, Dangerfield and Selwood back at the Cattery there, Chris.
Yeah, it's not a bad trio, is it? When you look at those names, there's three of the biggest names in the competition for the last decade. So, I'm sure they'll be delighted. They'll sell a few memberships over the next...
I reckon they will.
...a few Christmas presents for for people offering membership this year around Christmas time. That's right.
Absolutely.
Look, it's fantastic to see Gary back there. There's no doubt. The romance of the competition is still alive. I'm sure not just the Long supporters would appreciate the great player he's been, and for him now to be able to finish his career in the blue and white hoops, I'm sure most people are extremely happy with that. Looking at Geelong's performance over the trade period, I thought they did a fairly good job. They went out to get Gary. They secured Gary, so you have to give him a tick for that. With Steve Motlop, they raised some eyebrows with maybe the compensation. It's just, again, just one of the idiosyncrasies off the AFL free agency market is that they got an end of first round compensation. People talked about how it compared to Buddy Franklin from years ago, but you're not comparing apples with apples in the sense of how the trade, how the free agency compensation is given compared to trading, for example. So ultimately, it's not about, the AFL don't hide this point, it's not about actually giving compensation which is equivalent to a player's ability. It's all about what the attracting or the acquiring club is paying the player and his age. And they try to take out the emotion, which clearly as football supporters and even as recruiters, there's still emotion involved because they're just looking at what a player's ability is, not necessarily what the raw numbers are on age and contract value. So the AFL can't do it any other way. And I was a little bit surprised this week, Benny, when people talked about the AFL and the integrity supposedly around giving pick 19, whether it was contrived. Not at all. If anyone who knows Ken Wood and Andrew Dillon at the AFL, there's no way they're going to enter into that sort of conversation. It's all about integrity for them. And that's why they take out the emotion and the subjective values. They try to do it as objectively as you can. So for the Cats, yes, they'd certainly benefited from the Steve Motlop situation. To end up with two picks inside 24 gives them a really solid position in the draft without being outstanding. Steve Motlop would have been in their best 22. I still believe that. So they lose a player, but they get Gary in, who's clearly going to be in their best dozen. I think he even plays better footy down at the Cattery than he does in other parts of Australia. So overall, I think with the romance, with picking up a Gary's footy ability, I think they've done quite well. Overall, a B minus. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to change the whole club outside having the Ablett name back there, but in terms of their on-field performance, I think they step forward in the short term with Gary, but maybe not for the long term.
Well, that's the thing, Jacob, is trying to work out just how good Ablett is because he just played 14 games in a very injury-interrupted season, his fourth consistent consecutive injury-interrupted season, and still won the club's best and fairest. And from a champion data perspective, his numbers are still pretty insane.
Well, I've been a very frustrated man all week because I keep hearing people talk about Gary Ablett like he isn't a superstar. And he is still a superstar. On our player ratings, he's still the fourth best player in the league. The fourth best player. So that's Dangerfield 1, Martin 2. Fife still came in at 3. And then Ablett was 4. And the other thing I keep hearing is Ablett's going to play as a forward. Well, guess who led the league for clearances last year? It was Gary Ablett. So this is the number one clearance player in the league, going in with the number two clearance player in the league, which was Dangerfield last year. He's going to play in the midfield, and if anyone's going to go down forward, it's going to be Dangerfield. Dangerfield's proven he can actually play as a forward for 50, 60% of the game time. And now Gaz, who, as I said, was the number one clearance player in the league, takes his job in the midfield. All of a sudden, they're not a 10 times better team, but that midfield is strong, even without Dangerfield in there.
It's a nice conundrum, I suppose, for Chris Scott to have next year. Where do I just play all these stars and where do I put them on the field at the same time? On to the Gold Coast Suns. So really fascinated to get your thoughts, Chris, on the Lachie Weller deal. So there's two separate trades as part of the Lachie Weller deal, but the Suns got Lachie Weller and pick 41, but gave away their pick 2. And then they also got a future third round selection and gave away Brandon Matera as well. Now, Matera at times this year did show some really good signs. He is a bit of an inconsistent player for the Suns, but did show some good signs, and the Suns lost pick 2 as well. How did you see the frantic finish to the trade period and that decision by the Suns to give away pick 2?
Yeah, it's a big decision by them to do that. I mean, I can see why they want Lachie Weller. I think he's got a really good future in front of him. He's a talent. There's no doubt about that. And especially when you have a player who publicly indicates he wants to play for you, and there's so many players who are doing the opposite with Gold Coast. So I can understand why they pursued him so vigorously over the last 48 hours. Putting that to one side, I think they overpaid for him in terms of a trade sense. And I think, likewise, Fremantle probably ended up ahead with the Matera deal as well. I think they gave him away a little bit cheaply. So it surprised me a little bit. They had so much going on in the last 24 hours, particularly the last 3 hours of today, that they were clearly trying to close deals. Scotty Clayton is a very experienced campaigner. You've got a new coach who wants to position himself, in terms of making a mark, even in 2018. They know they've still got a very young group. They've got some challenges. I'm not trying to state the obvious here, but overall, I was a little bit surprised. I've got to say, it was a little bit un-Gold Coast-like. I think they've probably had better trade periods. As much as they've got Lachie Weller in, they have, and not surprisingly, had to release Gary Ablett. I thought it was the right thing to do, both for him and, obviously for the club. I think the best for him is behind him. Yeah, it's
How much has it changed your grade, that sort of frantic finish where the Suns sat before trade and now after trade?
Yeah, it's probably brought them down a fraction. I thought they were a B-plus going into the last couple of days, but I think they probably overspent in the last 3 hours of today. And I know it's very simplistic for me to be able to say that,
sure,
because I'm just sitting on the outside. But having said that, I've got to sit here in a position and give a call on it in an objective role. And you know, I've basically marked them down to a B-minus. I still think they've moved ahead of just doing nothing.
Right.
But having said that, I don't think they've overly strengthened their draft position. They do give themselves an opportunity next year with extra draft picks. But having said that, I would have liked to see probably a little less paid for Lockie Whelan and a little bit more on some of the deals they did.
Yeah, it was a fascinating move, and certainly from a fan's perspective, it was shocked a lot of people. The GWS Giants lost three players: Devin Smith, Nathan Wilson, and Matthew Kennedy. And then they got draft picks in return. Got pick 11, as you mentioned before, from the Bombers, from Devin Smith in the Devin Smith trade. And then were able to work out with Carlton pick 28 for Matthew Kennedy. So the Giants didn't pick any specific players up. Like last year, they gave away a lot of players. They lost upwards of 8 or 9 players last year, and they've lost another 3 this year. And probably, certainly 2 players that you would say in their best 22 in 2017, Chris.
Yeah, and that's a challenge that both GWS and Gold Coast have every year at the moment, since probably their second or third years in the competition, where these guys are starting to come out of contract. They get back to the wall a little bit with players wanting to return home or getting significantly improved offers, because as their ability grows with maturity, so does the expectation of contract value with their managers. Mm. And it really places pressure on both GWS and Gold Coast. So I feel for them in that regard. But having said that, that's where the feeling stops, because the GWS have got so many first-round draft picks that every other club is very envious, and rightfully so, going after them. I thought GWS held their nerve particularly well. To get 11 for Devin Smith is a really good result.
Absolutely.
For them. As much as it's positive for Essendon, at least they got very strong compensation. That's what is important. They've got a first and second round draft pick again this year. They're in a really solid position for a club that's clearly a top 4 team in the competition. So they're coming back to what I see now as you view them more as a mature AFL club. They're no longer the new kids on the block. They're very much now up there with the leaders in the competition, and they have to be treated as such. And I thought overall their trade result was solid. I've given them a B. I think that they're in a better position than they were a week ago. Yes, they've lost the likes of Nathan Wilson, they've lost Matthew Kennedy, but those things were inevitably going to happen anyway. So it's not a case of if they're going to lose them. We know they're going to lose these sorts of players, and they'll lose more next year. It's a case of who's coming through behind them, and they've still got plenty coming through.
Do you think they're in a better position, Jacob, from your point of view?
No, I think there's no doubt they're in a worse position than what they were last year, because they've lost Mumford, who they didn't expect to lose in this offseason. Devin Smith was a very important player, and Nathan Wilson was a very important player. But Devin Smith was the one I thought they couldn't lose in this trade period. I know they had a lot of people coming out of contract, and someone had to be the man to go, but the big problem for them last year was their forward pressure, and that's why in finals a lot of teams could just move the ball out of defence against them. And their number one player for forward half pressure, and actually the only one who rated elite for them, was Devin Smith, and yet he's the one who finds himself in different colours. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with pick 11, because I think they need a target in the draft. There's a lot of up-and-coming players that can fill that role of that high-pressure forward, but they desperately need that player. And might even have to stretch in the draft for someone like Lachlan Fogarty, who is a fantastic tackler who could fill that role rather than taking the best player, because GWS is in a position now where they've got almost every position filled. The one position they didn't have was high pressure forward, and they just lost their best high pressure forward.
It's a really good point, Jacob. Really good point.
Just one thing I want to say on that, though, is I think we lose sight of the fact that Josh Kelly's still at the club.
Yes.
And they had to pay a premium to keep him. So, I mean, while he's a player who's still there and he won't gain any headlines over the next week, he was under so much pressure to return to Victoria. You know, he had huge financial incentive to come back, and it's a credit to GWS over to keep him. So to keep him, they've had to increase their value. Someone had to go. And that's what I talk about, that there's a cause and effect, and that was the cause of the effect with the Devin Smith.
Yeah. On to the Hawks, a pretty quiet trade period overall. They did lose Luke Hodge as expected, and that deal went through for essentially pick 75 in the end. But they earlier on in the trade period, Chris, they picked up Jarman Impey. They did give away pick 33 for him, and there were some late pick swaps in that as well for the Hawks. So interesting trade, that one, but they do get someone who I think can probably fit in pretty well, Jarman Impey, into that Hawthorn lineup.
Yeah, look, it's obviously a former club of mine. And,
yes.
And so I've certainly, I take great interest in what they're doing. But I'm going to say that I'm still disappointed what they did.
Right.
And what they didn't do. Jarman Impey certainly equates to pick 33 or pick 34, okay, ultimately because of the sliding. I think he equates to that. He's a high, sorry, a low possession winner. He's only, I think, averages 12 possessions a game. So he certainly has to do more in games, but sometimes it's these pressure acts, which, you know, I think what they're focusing on here for Hawthorn. What I'll say, and this is the part that I'm critical about, is that they're a club who has traded so aggressively 12 months ago with O'Meara and Mitchell.
Mm.
The Mitchell deal certainly paid off in the sense he's the best and fairest winner. He's an elite player. We know that. But they paid so much for Yoga O'Meara. And I'm not saying he won't be a great player going forward. It's all about injury with him because he's certainly got the talent. It's all about just maintaining his fitness. What I'll say is about a club that's had one top 20 pick since 2010, and that is Ryan Burton in 2015, yeah, who they picked at pick 19.
Good pick, though.
He was a very good pick, but that actually highlights my point that, yes, they've been a very successful team. You can't be critical of that part. Three premierships in a row, people would understand they're going to have to take a backward step at some point. But what I think they needed to do this year, and even last year, but even more so this year and the same next year, and I think I said this 12 months ago in this very room, Ben, that they needed to be aggressive in bringing in extra draft picks. They've ended up with one pick inside 50, and it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
They really are going to put themselves under enormous pressure by the end of this decade with the lack of quality juniors in that team list. And that's putting aside the fact they've got O'Meara and Mitchell who are quality, but you look behind that, yes, there's a Burton, there's a Sicily, but that doesn't go much deeper. And that's my real concern, is that they should have traded certain probably experienced players out of the group. And not saying they didn't try, but they didn't achieve it. Whether they tried or not, they didn't achieve it.
Yeah.
And I really do think this club needs to be getting 3, 4, or 5 draft picks inside 40 next year. As an absolute critical aim. Not so much about bringing in new players from opposition teams.
A grade?
Grade for the Hawks is, for me, it's a C-. It's Impey, yes, I think he's better than probably what they could have got at pick 33 or 34 in the draft. But for me, the failure is not securing more draft picks, so C-.
So how do you read the lack of getting draft picks, Jacob?
Well, I think the reason they don't have any draft picks is because they put themselves in a hole last year with that trade they did with St Kilda. So now we can evaluate that whole trade they did with the Saints. And what they got was picks 10 and 68, and they gave up picks 7, 23 and 36. So that, in the draft point system, is about 1,500 points of value to the Hawks and about 3,000 points of value to the Saints. So essentially the Saints turned pick 10 into 2 pick 10s, and the Hawks cost themselves a crack at this year's draft.
It does, when you put it like that, as of course the draft value index expert that you are, Jacob, it is very interesting reading for Hawks fans. On to the D's, they got Jake Lever in the end, Jake Lever as well as pick 35 and a future third round pick. They lost Jack Watts, and we might talk about Watts and Port Adelaide. Oh, well, we may as well talk a little bit about Jack Watts now and how much he meant to Melbourne. They also picked up Harley Ballack and a couple of other pick swaps in there as well. But they did get their man, Jake Lever, who slots straight into their best 22, Chris, as one of the best young key defenders around in the competition.
Yeah, I've probably taken a slightly alternative view to many pundits this week. I think Melbourne had an extremely good trade period.
Right.
I know people have been critical of the fact that Jake Watts appeared to leave for a second-round pick, a late second-round pick, which, being a former first-round selection in the draft, I think is undervalued, but he's had 10 years to show what he can do at Melbourne. I think ultimately they just grew tired of him. I'm not going to be extra critical of Jack. The fact is he's a really good person. I think they grew tired and frustrated with his inability to take the game by the scruff of the neck, because he's now very much a mature age player. So they just wanted to cut their losses, so to speak, with Jack. And I think it's great for Jack to get an opportunity where people don't necessarily have a premeditated view of him. He's going interstate. He's going to a club who's clearly going to compete next year at the high end, especially with the other players that Port Adelaide picked up, which we'll touch on in a moment. But overall, I think Melbourne did extremely well. I think they got their man, Jake Lever, as we've talked about, number one intercept mark in the competition. I think he'll add, without stating the obvious, he's going to add great support to their back half. He's a really good person. He should be able to provide leadership as the years go on to that team. They've got an exciting list as it stands. And so they get another young player who's in the same demographic as their group coming through. They're not going for a 28, 29-year-old where the Crows are with, say, a Gibbs, because they've already got to the top of the tree. I think Melbourne traded extremely well. And overall, I've given them a B+.
How did you read the whole Jack Watts scenario, Jacob?
Well, I take a bit of a different view than Chris, because I think they actually got unders for Watts. Watts is, an underappreciated player, especially from a numbers point of view, because he looks laconic and he doesn't look like he's always giving 100%, but he's one of the best kicks in the league, especially for goal and kicking inside 50. So on a great team, he becomes more valuable because they get that plenty of opportunity to go inside 50. And we've seen when Melbourne look good, Watts looks good. And then when Melbourne have been struggling, Watts struggles. So I think when he goes to Port Adelaide, which looks for all intents and purposes to be a fantastic team next year, you'll see him really, really shine. And Melbourne supporters might be kicking themselves seeing that they've let their pick one go.
Yeah, Melbourne supporters are quite frustrated throughout the week is something that we're picking up on foxfooty.com.au. If there was silence out at Collingwood, there was crickets, I think, out at North Melbourne. Very little in the end. But it was great to see, from my perspective, Chris, Sam Gibson find a new home. North Melbourne gave him away for pick 91. So great to see Sam Gibson get a new home at the Adelaide Crows. But they didn't do much else.
No, they didn't. And hence my damning assessment. You know, this is not sitting in judgment of any person at North Melbourne. Sure. But what I'll say is that's a club I'm extremely disappointed. I think that for a team that has come out publicly and said they're in the rebuilding phase, they made half a dozen delistings. Yes, great to see Sam Gibson get another opportunity. I was actually involved with Sam at Hawthorn when he was involved as a rookie there. He's a quality young man. And I respect the fact that North Melbourne are trying to make space on their list, hence why people like a Gibson, a Hanson, a Mullet, these types of guys, are moved on. But if you're going to rebuild, you have to do it more than just having one pick in each round of the draft, because that's what you get every year as a given anyway. So for them to be so dormant in the trade period, they needed to be actually trading players out to get returns for, and I'd hardly say pick 91 indicates an aggressive rebuild. So I'm really disappointed. The fact that I'd heard all year they're in the rebuilding phase, that I thought they'd go into this trade period and make a decision on two or three guys and try to get an extra, either first, second, potentially multiple extra third rounds. So they're looking more with a demographic of, say, five or six picks inside 50. That should have been their aim. Now, I'm not saying they didn't look to do that, but they certainly didn't get anywhere near it. And so hence, and if you wait for this, they've got the big D next to their name.
Big D.
I think they've actually really let themselves down in a very critical period.
So I suppose the logical person that they could have traded out was Todd Goldstein, who, with this three ruckmen there, they've all committed to as well. But Goldstein is an All-Australian, incredible champion data numbers a couple of years ago, has obvious value for a team like a GWS or a team needing a presence of a ruckman. Would he have been the perfect guy that they could have used to try and get up that draft order?
Yeah, he is, but he's on big money. So that would have caused some clubs to balk. But we've seen, even with other players in the competition, potentially Jack Watts, for example, it's been speculated that Melbourne are going to pay some of his money even at Port Adelaide. That's what North, I'm hoping they've done. As I said, we're inside the bunker. They're inside the bunker at Arden Street. And I'm sure they had the aim to try to improve their draft position, but they didn't achieve it. And they've got to do it at all costs. If you're going to be in a rebuilding phase, you can't allow the cycle to dictate to you by saying, oh, look, we've got an early draft pick because we're finished at the bottom of the ladder. So I've got an early first round, an early second round, early third round. That's a given. But if you're going to be a club like what Carlton have done, where they've said, we understand we've got improvement to make. We know we're in a rebuilding phase. Brisbane, to a lesser extent, still did it, but we're way ahead of what North Melbourne did. They were prepared to lose players who may be in their best 10 to 12 right now to at least improve their draft position and say, yes, we're going to actually walk the talk, so to speak. We're going to back up what we're saying. We're in a rebuild, so therefore we're going to release players and ultimately pick up extra draft picks. So for North Melbourne not to do that, and this is the 1 week or the 2 week period of the year with free agency and trading, that you can actually acquire those draft picks. They can't do it in a week's time. They can't do it now for another 12 months. So I really reckon they've missed an opportunity.
Yeah, I think it is with modern football as well. Salary cap space is a resource, and that's a resource they could have sold to other clubs. So someone like Goldstein, who, yes, we highly rate, and especially for a team like GWS, if North Melbourne had been able to offer them Goldstein and said, look, we'll still pay 90% of his salary, GWS might have been even willing to pay someone as high as pick 11, just because they go, we get a free player for the next 2-3 years and don't have to pay a salary, which means we can keep people like Kelly, keep people like Dylan Scheel, and still get that ruckman to replace Mumford. So it was a real surprise that they weren't able to leverage their excess cap space that they weren't able to spend on Martin or on Kelly and use that in the trade period.
Yeah, it's a very good point. They were in the deal or in the pipeline for a big fish right throughout the season and have walked away by the end of the trade period with not a lot, as Chris said. On the total contrary, Port Adelaide have walked away with quite a fair bit. And I'd be interested to get your take on this. Chris, being a person who's had an affiliation with the Power in the past, they started the trade period by getting the big three, and then on the final day of the trade period, or the last couple of days of the trade period, have let go of four players who aren't probably in their best 22. And on the surface, it looks like Port Adelaide has been one of the big success stories of this trade period.
Yeah, on the surface, it certainly does. I mean, to pick up those players who you could arguably suggest they're going to be in their best 22, probably for a premiership side, you've got to have 27, 28 elite players to pick from in any given week. So we know there's going to be injuries and there's going to be form fluctuations. So they've done that. That's what I'm really pleased about, is they've recognised that they fell short of the mark this year, probably fell out of the finals a little bit quicker than most people expected, probably 1 week at least earlier than most people expected. They've addressed it. They've said, okay, we're actually take the bull by the horns here. We're going to become aggressive. We said, actually leading into the trade period, we're going to be a big player, and they backed it up. They did what they said they'd do. And what's interesting is it's almost like civil war over there in South Australia, where you've got Adelaide and Port Adelaide. We know they're rivals, but they were both very, very active in this trade period. Port know they need to make that little bit extra up to catch the Crows.
Yep.
The Crows know they're coming, so they want to stay ahead because they knew they fell just short of Richmond this year. They probably feel now slightly wasted opportunity. Port are coming with a rush behind them.
Yeah.
And so it's going to make it really interesting next year, especially when it comes to the showdown, because these two teams, their best teams, their best sides on the park, are both going to compete at the very high level. So I was pleased with what Port Adelaide do. There's no doubt the likes of Rockcliffe, Motlop, Watts are going to be in the best side. They did pay big prices in the end from their draft position. One pick inside 50, it's not a lot to have.
Yep.
You know, so they've put all their eggs in the basket that we're competing. We're competing now, and that's what they've done.
Grade?
Grade for Port Adelaide, I'm still very pleased with what they did. B+, because I think ultimately they've improved their position significantly over the course of the trade period, from where they were 2 weeks ago to where they are now. Probably the only reason they didn't get an A is that they just don't have enough strong enough draft presence, right, for my liking.
You think they're big winners here, Jacob?
Well, I think they're the big winners, and I think what's important to remember is they actually entered this trade period without their first round picks. They traded away last year, and they've actually acquired a lot of future picks next year as well. So not only have they brought in all these players, but they've almost just based on this trade period broken even, because they're already starting without a first round pick, and they're invested in that SA draft, as we're saying, next year. And then the ones to watch out with the players they've brought in is someone like Rockcliffe. I think people are assuming is going to be a midfielder, and that's what he's been at Brisbane for a long time. But we've seen it as a junior and all the way through it. When he has been used as a forward, he's actually been incredibly effective. And he actually hurt his shoulder late in the year, went forward last four rounds, kicked 9 goals. So don't be surprised to see him spending 60, 70% of his time as a forward next year and waxing maybe with Robbie Gray. And even Stephen Motlop will hopefully get a bit of time down there. So that forward line, they've almost invested three players into that forward six.
Yeah, it's a really good point Jacob makes. I think a lot of people wouldn't be aware that Tom was actually leading goal kicker in the TAC Cup. So, I mean, he's one of the big frustrations for recruiters going back almost a decade in the TAC Cup was that we only saw Tom play full forward, never play on ball. Now, ironically, in the last decade, it's been all playing on ball and only a little bit down forward. So, he can certainly play as a very dangerous forward.
Yeah, I think I was doing the numbers on him before because we've got Jack Higgins, who just broke his record for the best ever numbers as a junior. But Tom Rockcliffe kicked 99 goals in the TAC Cup as a junior across, I think it was about 30 games. So, yeah, unbelievable forward as a junior. And he has occasionally translated that into the AFL.
It's an exciting best 22 for Port Adelaide next year, so the Power fans would be pretty happy about that. On to the Tigers. I think I saw a tweet earlier on today that said Richmond have stopped sipping their frozen margaritas to make a token trade, and I think that was when they gave up their future third-round pick for pick 53 from Geelong, and Jacob might be able to talk about that from a points and father-son perspective. But do the Tigers really need to do anything that much this period, Chris? They've just won a pretty handy flag.
Yeah, but what I like is they didn't rest on their laurels. I mean, you might say that they've only just done something very late with pick swap, but I'm really pleased with what they did. They've now, as a premiership side, got three picks inside 25, and you know that's very rare. I've got to say, very rare, especially if they weren't acquired as future draft picks in the first place. So I think Blair Hartley and Dan Richardson have done particularly well because maybe they're celebrating for the first 12 days of the trade period, but the last 24 hours, I think they pulled a rabbit out of the hat by doing that late pick swap. I really think that's an inspired decision. They didn't need to do a lot because I think there's enough improvement still coming in that list. I don't think, similar to the Bulldogs, while the Bulldogs took a step back this year, and Richmond would know that in many people's view, they weren't the best side going into the finals, but they had the best final series. And we know, like the Bulldogs last year, how important that four-week period is without stating the obvious there. So they know they have to continue to improve next year for them to compete again at the very top end because you've got the likes of GWS, you've got the two Adelaide clubs, you've got Sydney, and then Geelong. They're all going to compete for a premiership anyway. So Richmond have to take a step forward. While they haven't done it in terms of the players they've brought in, I think they can see continued development in their list anyway because that bottom five or six in their team, you could argue, may not even play round one because there's other guys of a similar style, a similar standard at the club. To credit, they've won a premiership. You can't criticise them. But I thought really good choice to ultimately do that draft swap late in the piece. And for me, it's only a C+, but I still think that plus is very important because they've taken a step forward.
Yeah, so I think the draft points is what's important for them because they're looking at Patrick Naish. And I think what we've found recently is he might actually slip a bit further than what we initially thought. So initially he was sort of looking around that 15 to 18 mark. Now we're thinking he might be slipping to around about that 25, if not later. So they've moved that fifth picks 15 and 18 and got a pick at 25. So I think they might be designating that pick and going, we think that's going to be our Patrick Naish pick. And they'll still get a pick 20, which they can use, and a pick 18, which they can use as well. And I think the other thing that's important about this year's draft is it actually has a lot of options if you're looking for high-pressure forwards. And as much as Richmond already have a lot of that player, they could definitely improve on people like Castagna and Townsend by drafting top 20 players like we saw with Chai Bolton and Daniel Rioli to play that role. So don't be surprised if we see in the draft Richmond actually invest more in that Tiny Tiger strategy.
Onto the St Kilda, the Tiny Tiger strategy. That could catch on. We'll give that some legs. I'm surrounded by St Kilda presence here. The Saints, in the end, only the two trades completed. They did pick up Logan Austin from Port Adelaide. But I suppose the interesting move from the Saints, Chris, is that they have held on to pick 7 and 8. We talked about that Hawthorn deal a little bit earlier on in the podcast. But they have held on to pick 7 and 8. They also have pick 34 as well, the Saints. So they go to the draft in a pretty good position.
They do, and I think again they did so well, as Jacob referred to in last year's draft, to get that pick from Hawthorn. That's put them in a really good position in the 2017 draft. I've got to say, what I'm most pleased about is what they didn't do, and that is trade away 7 and 8. There was really strong talk over the last 48, 72 hours that they were going to trade away pick 7 and 8 and pick up potentially pick 2 and a later pick. I'm really glad they didn't do that. As much as there's probably 4 standouts in this draft, and picking at 7 and 8 is going to make it hard to get one of those 4 guys. They need multiple options coming through. They don't have enough elite talent yet. And yes, by securing pick 2, if that had happened, they'd certainly get an elite talent. I would still prefer them going, as it's turned out, to the draft for pick 7 and 8 and trying to get 2 elite players for the future. The one thing I'm probably interested in and somewhat surprised is trading away their future second round pick, because I think next year is going to be such a strong draft that depending where they finish, we know that the second round is the round in the draft, that it's a big discrepancy between what is a second round and what is a second round. Ultimately, it could be pick 19, 20.
Could
be pick 35, 36. And that's where the draft really always falls away, between pick 20 and 30 is where it really starts to taper. So where they finish on the ladder is going to be fairly crucial to what they've just done. Because if they have a poor year and have been seen to trade away pick 20, 21, 22, 23 in what will be a strong draft, I think it comes back to bite them. If they have a strong year and that pick is anywhere outside 28, even though it doesn't sound like a big difference, I think it is in a draft sense. So overall, the Saints for me, it's a C. It's an average result. I think it's what they didn't do, which ultimately saves them in the end.
Happy that they kept their picks, Jacob?
I think it's interesting that they did decide to keep their picks because the Saints have very specific needs. And I think their specific needs are they need almost an elite midfielder or someone in the midfield with a bit of flair. And then they also probably need key defenders. So I'm worried that at 7 and 8, there might not be that player that was available to them if they had have gone up in the draft. So Stevenson will probably be gone. Dow will probably be gone. And they're the players high in the draft with a bit of explosion. They'll probably be left with the midfielders like Hunter Clark, and Andrew Brayshaw, who are very good players, but they don't probably have the same upside as these other guys. And then at pick eight as well, if they do want to get that key defender, the obvious standout is Aaron Norton. But even eight feels very early to be taking a key defender. So seven and eight, they're great picks to have in the draft. But with St Kilda's very specific needs, if they're going to go down a needs path, I worry that they're going to get players, either have to overpay for players that they want, or they're going to get players that they don't actually need.
Three clubs to go, gentlemen. I don't think we'll be spending a lot of time on the first two. The Swans, very quiet, have been pretty active in trade periods in the past, but as we mentioned before, just the one trade for them, like Collingwood, and they lost Sam Murray, but they get that future second-round pick, which might be handy because they have Nick Blakey, who's been attached to the Sydney Swans Academy next year, Chris, who might be an option for them, so that might help with some banking of points there.
You hit the nail on the head because he's a very good type, young Blakey, so yep. I think they'll be very keen on securing him because he's got other options. He doesn't have to play at Sydney. So ultimately, I think they've done well with just doing one trade. I'm sure they would have liked to bring in a player. They've always been a very aggressive trader.
They have.
This year they had a much quieter period. Having said that, I've given them an average rating for Seeks just because there was such limited involvement by them this year. I think the fact that what they did get for Sam Murray is actually a good result. So they probably could have got to a C-plus just on that one result. But having said that, they're such a quiet player. I think they have enough talent, at least, especially coming through their academy, that they didn't need to do much, to be honest.
Didn't need to do much from your end either, Jacob?
They've almost got a full team already. They were the best team for the last 15 rounds of the season, just got diddled in the final. So I'm not too worried about Sydney. They can just roll out the same 22 as last year and be fine.
The Eagles is an interesting one, Chris. They have picked up Brendan Archie from the Port Adelaide Footy Club, one of those fringe players who's found another home. But the other deal they did was with the Gold Coast Suns, where they picked up a lot of second-round picks, 21, 26 and 37, plus a future second-round pick. But they did give away pick 50 in this year's draft and their first-round draft pick from next year. That first-round draft pick went to the Suns and I think was a bit of a clincher or a bit of a sealer for the Suns that maybe just helped them alleviate the pressure of giving away pick two for Lachie Weller. So I'm interested in your thoughts on those two West Coast deals.
Yeah, you're right. It was interesting, though. They clearly had a strategy that they wanted to increase their draft participation this year.
This year, yeah.
And that is probably flying in the face of what most clubs would suggest is next year's is the draft you should be trying to build into. Now, history will tell us that there's good players available in any draft. So they clearly, with so many picks between 20 and 30, they believe that there's some depth in this year's draft, and time will tell. I think ultimately trading out of next year's draft is a dangerous strategy, even though I think they did the right thing by trading into this year's draft because they've got some immediate needs. I've been probably a little bit concerned about the quality of their juniors, their under 21 group.
Yep.
If I look at that comparable to other clubs, as obvious as that sounds, especially clubs who are competing at the same level. They're a finals team, went deep into the finals really halfway through. And if I compare it even to the sides around them, we're talking about Sydney, around GWS, even Richmond, I think that their juniors are much more talented than West Coast. So I can see why they want to become more aggressive with getting more draft selections. I think this is probably step one in a two-step process that they'll be just as active next year in getting draft picks.
Right.
So even though they've traded already out of next year, I expect they'll come back really hard by letting some players go, potentially returning home next year. And I expect that over the course of the 2 years, we'll see what their real strategy was.
A grade for the West Coast Eagles?
For me, it's a C+. I'm pleased they increased their draft participation, but I think it did come at some cost.
Well, they've lost Sam Mitchell. They've lost Matt Prittis from that midfield brigade there. How are you assessing their midfield at this stage, Jacob?
I think we're all a little bit worried about that midfield because they've lost two of their top three clearance players from last year, and they weren't a good clearance team last year. So that midfield is obviously the immediate need, as Chris is saying. And I think with that trade they did with Gold Coast, it shows just how strong next year's draft is. Because for that one future first-round pick, they got four second-round picks back. That's three second-round picks this year and a second-round pick in next year's draft as well. So they do have a lot of picks now between that 15 and 30 to try and maybe find a midfielder or two. Maybe Braden Ainsworth's a mature age midfielder from WA. Tim Kelly is a 23-year-old midfielder from WA. They might be the sort of players they're targeting because they do need immediate players into that midfield. And Brendan Archie, even in the sample last year, was only averaging 5 clearances per match. So I'm not sure if he's going to be the answer for their stoppage game.
Okay, and the final club is the Western Bulldogs, who picked up the first deal of the trade period. Happened very, very early on, actually, on the Friday of the free agency period. Was picking up Jackson Trengove as a free agent, and then picked up Hayden Crozier earlier on this week. And then eventually did the deal with Western Bulldogs, and also you could almost say a three-way deal with Carlton as well, that saw Jake Stringer leave. And they were able to pick up Josh Shackey as well a little bit later on in the trade period as well. So how do you assess what the Dogs were able to do, particularly late in the trade period, Chris?
Well, it's funny. It's a tale of the tape that ultimately, when it came to the finish line, I think they've done extremely well. Hence why I've given them a B+.
Okay.
So cutting straight to the chase, that probably about 3 or 4 days ago, they were down at CC- for me. I thought they missed an opportunity early in the piece by not pulling the trigger with Jake Stringer. I think that became a somewhat protracted and somewhat ugly situation, you know, where you've got family members talking in public about it, been disappointed with the club. You've got the club then having to recall their position, potentially to bring him back. That was obviously going to cause frustration with a number of people. Essendon were holding their ground. They did have the opportunity to do something with Essendon for pick 11 as early as the first day of the trade period or second day of the trade period. So I thought last week was a bit messy for them, but they recovered their position extremely well. And to the credit of the people involved at the Bulldogs, you know, I think they've finished well ahead of the tape. That Trengove will help them. No doubt he'll help them. I think he's probably flown under the radar a bit in the last couple of years from the player he was 5 years ago.
Yep.
I think he just needs a new opportunity. I think Hayden Crozier is much better than what we've actually seen. I think he'll be better for coming home, so to speak. He's a really exciting player in the TAC Cup. For some people, I've seen how good he is overhead. He's a very strong mark for his size, so I think he can play really in most positions. You know, he can play forward and back, and providing he stays fit, I think he will still be force his way into their best side.
Shackey in the best 22?
Probably not right now, no. Okay. But I do think they've done the right thing bringing him in.
Okay.
Again, we spoke earlier about Josh Shackey's a player I still think has the ability. He's just somewhat an immature young lad. And I don't mean in a foolish sense. I just mean he's not a rough and tough type of player. It will take him time to gain the confidence at AFL level, at senior level. And I think, you know, it might take him another 12 or 24 months. But not unlike Tom Boyd, who had similar challenges in his first couple of years. He wasn't, again, the most aggressive player we know it. He did in grand final 12 months ago.
Mm.
So not saying Josh Shackey's going to do that in the next 12 months, but I believe he's worthwhile, especially for them to give away pick 25 and pick 40 for him. I thought that was well worth what they paid for him. So overall, I think the Bulldogs did quite well.
Stringer's an interesting one, Jacob, because we saw how good he was a couple of years ago. And even in the 2016 flag push, he didn't have a great final series at all, and then really sort of dwindled off in the back half of 2017.
Yeah, I think what we saw in 2015 was he was All-Australian and really deservingly so. He kicked 56 goals that year. He kicked 8 bags of 4. So in the next 2 years since then, he's kicked a total of 5 bags of 4 in 2 years. And in the last, 8 matches this year, he kicked 5 goals. So I think he was checked out of the Bulldogs. The question is, can he get back to that 2015 form? And with someone that young, and it's probably attitude-based, we're thinking he can. So we think that's a big loss for them. But then you look at Shackey coming in as well. They've probably got him at unders. So they've traded a forward for unders, but then got in a player from Brisbane at unders. Key forwards take time. We try and preach that over and over and over again. Key forwards take time. You look at Josh Kennedy, the same age. They're on a very similar path. Shackey has struggled, there's no doubt about that. But I think you'll appreciate playing with a better team. Brisbane wouldn't be my pick of the teams to play as a key forward. Someone like Eric Hipwood, who creates a lot of goals himself, wouldn't struggle so much. But Shackey is a player who will rely on good delivery to play well. So moving to a better team will help. Playing at Etihad Stadium, I think, will help him as well. And I think you'll see that Josh Shackey, within 2 years, will be a permanent fixture in their best 22.
It's a good analysis from Jacob. And both of you have done fantastic analysis. You mentioned Stringer might have checked out in 2017. I think the Fox Footy office has checked out in particular. we're staffed. We're buggered after a big couple of weeks. But it's been a very interesting couple of weeks. Chris, you can probably go at home and put your feet up now for a couple of weeks as well. Or it's all on the countdown of the draft, I suppose, for you.
It is countdown of the draft. And it's an interesting draft because, as we've alluded to already in this conversation, that it's not a clear delineated order. I think the first 4 to 5, most people like Jacob will talk about quite clearly. But if you're talking from pick 5 or 6 onwards, good luck.
Yes.
I really think it's going to be difficult between, say, pick 6 and pick 20. I know that our group that are doing recruiting for several clubs this year, that ultimately it's quite messy. And there's going to be some talent there, but you would have preferred to have another 12 months to look at them, to be honest.
And for Jacob, besides the draft, you're basically on the countdown to the Champion Data Christmas party with Red Cordell.
We're working very hard on the 2018 AFL Prospectus. Everyone's favourite book, your favourite book, I know, Betty. Yes. So we've got to work hard. It doesn't write itself. So we'll be working away for the next 2 or 3 months getting that complete.
Looking forward to Fantasy Freeco's offerings in that, as always. And remember, you can keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.